It was when you came on your official visit, they played like the old school movie with the Four Horsemen and the old school Notre Dame, and you got the, and there's a...
Now that's a follow-up question, Eric Hansen. That's a heck of a follow-up question right there.
If you can be physical and if you can take the breath out of somebody by hitting them, man, it don't matter how many yards or what the offense is or what the schemes are, that'll always be the same.
But I still think there's a place for Notre Dame and the ideals of Notre Dame football in the wide, broad scope of the sport right now.
Eric, I'm hoping I don't run into you in South Bend because it'll probably cost me a round of drinks.
From the South Bend Tribune and ND Insider, this is the Pot of Gold Podcast with Tyler James and Eric Hansen.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Pot of Gold, an ND Insider Podcast. I'm Tyler James, and I'm joined once again by the one and only Eric Hansen. Together we cover Notre Dame football for ND Insider and the South Bend Tribune. The Pot of Gold podcast is brought to you by Zaxby's, taking chicken to a whole new level of flavor. Stop by your neighborhood Zaxby's today or order at zaxbys.com. And Tire Rack, the way tire buying should be. The game you've been worrying about since January is finally here. Notre Dame will head down to Athens for a showdown with number 3 Georgia Saturday night on CBS. And to properly preview the big game, we've invited on CBS Sports lead college football analyst Gary Danielson, who will be calling the game alongside Brad Nessler and Jamie Erdahl. Gary, thanks for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure, Tyler. Hi, good to have you again. Good to talk Notre Dame football. It's been a while.
All right. I wanted to start on the Georgia end of things. What do you think is the most impressive aspect of this Georgia team right now?
I think it's just right now the volume of their talent. If you look at a lot of these college teams, all across the country, a couple of key players that get nicked, and you could pretty much count about 20% of your players are going to miss, multiple games in a typical year. And if you look at the way Kirby Smart has built this football team over the last 3 or 4 recruiting classes, he knows what he has to do to compete with the likes of Alabama and Clemson and Oklahoma and Ohio State and Notre Dame and Michigan. And that means, collecting a lot of talent, a lot of depth, and creating a lot of competition within the framework of your football team. And when you couple that, and I'm sure we'll get to it, with a veteran quarterback who's played in a lot of big games, you pretty much have a team that can play against anybody this year.
Gary, I know in the 2017 game, the thing that jumped out at me was Georgia's defensive speed. Notre Dame had an offensive line that ended up winning the Joe Moore Award, right, and yet they only rushed for 55 yards on 37 carries, and the longest run was 8 yards. And just, is this typical Georgia speed? Roquan Smith was the middle linebacker on that team, but, are we seeing a team that's as athletic and fast on defense as maybe that 2017 Georgia team?
I think Roquan Smith was a special player, and I don't think there's anybody on this team that is in that category. Roquan, everybody knew all across the Southeastern Conference, every game I did that Georgia was involved with, the first name that came up was Roquan. I really felt that team was maybe a little bit more talented in the front seven than this current Georgia team is. But I think this Georgia team is deeper. When you caught that Georgia team at the beginning of the year, you caught a really healthy football team, like this one is right now. But as the year went on, they had to replace players that weren't quite as good as their front line. Now, they're bringing maybe not veteran players, but they're bringing talent, across every position on their team. It's a much deeper team. I don't know if they have the top-end defensive talent that they had on that team.
Gary, I know from the Notre Dame fan perspective, it's hard for them to find sort of a weakness with Georgia. They kind of understand what Notre Dame's weaknesses are. But what, in your opinion, are there any weaknesses on this Georgia team?
I really don't think so. I went into the year saying that the part of the team that had to step up and kind of maybe answer the questions was at wide receiver. They lost 4 key wide receivers off their team, and they did not have a lot returning. Now, you talk, at the SEC media days to Jake Fromm, and you talk to Kirby. He said, "Well, we don't really have any experience at all. But the guys we recruited, we feel very, very, very comfortable with. There's a lot of talent there. And my big question was, yeah, the talent will be fine against the, you know, inferior talent. But in the big games, when they play against Auburn, Notre Dame, you know, Clemson if they get there, Alabama if they meet them in the SEC championship, usually that experience comes through. There's going to be in any game that's, you know, worth watching till the end. If you get one of those good games, invariably you're going to get in that fourth quarter a couple third and eights, you know, one third and ten sprinkled in there where those guys have to make a critical catch, and that's where the experience really shows up. Now, watching them on tape, they're extremely talented. I think the transfer of Lawrence Cager from Miami has changed them a bit, made them more comfortable. Demetrius Robinson, who played at Cal, has made them more comfortable. But some of their young talent players, talent is talent nowadays. We just got done doing the Alabama-South Carolina game, and Ryan Helinski comes in as a true freshman quarterback, and we're all expecting the worst. And you go watch the kid practice, and he goes, you know, it's almost as if he's getting ready for a 7-on-7 AAU flag football game. He was zipping it around. He went in the game, and it does feel like these young kids nowadays are not as intimidated as much by the big atmosphere as they were maybe even 5 years ago. And you know where I first noticed that was in the 2017 game when Jake Fromm went in there. I thought all year that that was going to be a tough place for Jake to play. You know, that decision that Kirby made to go with Jake Fromm, I go, wow, you know, I played there, the enormity of the game and everything. I just didn't know if he'd show up like he did, and he ended up making that last drive and, you know, kind of jump-starting this whole program for Kirby and Georgia.
Gary, I'm wondering if you could compare Fromm versus Book in terms of college, being college quarterbacks, and also maybe right. as pro prospects.
You know, Jake really sneaks up on you. Let's start with Jake. When you first watch him, you go, he seems like a really nice college quarterback. He had some really good coaching early in his career with Jim Chaney, his offensive coordinator, who was Drew Brees' offensive coordinator at Purdue. And, you know, when he was being measured against Jacob Eason his freshman year, when you go out and watch practice, you know, Jacob is 6'5". He's got a gun for an arm, and he's zipping it all over. And Jake comes in there and kind of, you know, tosses it around, and he never really catches your eye in practice. Then you watch him game after game after game, and I don't want to get too tangentially away from this, but, you know, I'm from Detroit, and I grew up, one of my heroes was Al Kaline, who played right field for the Detroit Tigers all the years. And I used to go watch him, and I would talk to my dad, you know, and I go, it never seems like he has to make a diving catch. He never does anything but catch the ball. And he goes, yeah, because he anticipates it, and he's smooth, and he gets there, and he makes every catch look like it's routine, even though if another guy was out there, he'd be spitting around and have to dive at the last second. And the more I watch Jake, the more I realize that he makes everything look really simple. It's like, okay, that was easy. That must have been a great call or a breakdown on the defense. And it really didn't pop for me where I said, whoa, this guy is going to play at the next level, until last year's SEC championship game where he was, you know, when you play against Alabama, they are going to challenge you to throw the ball to the outside in their bump and run coverages. And he, for 3.5 quarters, was delivering a virtuoso performance against Alabama and had them beat. It's right there. And I said, not only is this guy good after the snap, but he's good, and I think he's as good as I've seen in college football in a while before the snap. So I think he has a great chance to play at the next level, and his talent doesn't readily just pop on the page, but it becomes apparent the more times you watch. Now, I've only been able to watch Ian on tape a little bit on television, and I'd like to watch them live. So I did get in there to watch a practice. You know, I flew into South Bend and watched them practice. And he's much quicker than I thought with his feet. You know, I mean, he is so much more nimble. He's an effortless thrower, and I'd say he's at the same, maybe a half inch shorter than Fromm. He's at the Drew Brees height, you know, right in that kind of like 5'11 and a half, 6 foot, it seems to me from watching him. But his nimbleness, I mean, his feet feel like they're just gliding there all the time. And I think right now, I'm going to just stick to evaluating him as a college quarterback. And I think it's too early to start evaluating as pro potential. I think he's everything you need to win at the college level. You don't need anything more than that. With the right players around him, he's a handful for any college defense. And with the right game plan and healthy players, he's definitely in the top tier of quarterbacks in college football.
You're listening to the Pot of Gold podcast presented by Zaxby's. Before we hear more from Gary Danielson, let's take a short break.
We know you like football. So do we. We're TireRack.com, and this is our version of a two-minute drill, except it's only 30 seconds. TireRack.com has an enormous selection of tires. Not sure which ones to buy? Use our tire decision guide to find the right tires for your vehicle and the way you drive. Then get them shipped fast and free on all orders over $50. Shipping is in as little as one day. Free. TireRack.com ships to independent, recommended installers. TireRack.com, the way tire buying should be. Touchdown!
Gary, I wanted to follow up. You know, we've been kind of breaking down different aspects of this matchup. I'm going to get to the heart of the matter. Is there a script that allows Notre Dame to come out of Athens, Georgia on Saturday night with a victory? Is there a scenario?
I think it's the formula that you always use when you're an underdog. Here's how I look at this. First of all, when I went and watched Notre Dame, I had them in the Sun Bowl. I had them a few years earlier when they played in Ireland against Navy. There's no doubt in my mind, 1 through 85, this is a much more talented football team than it was 3 years ago or 5 years ago. They're real-looking players on here that can compete with anybody. I don't think that their second-level players is as deep as Georgia's second-level players. I also don't think their interior defensive linemen are at the same level as Georgia's interior. And maybe I'd even have to include in that the linebacker play inside. Mm-hmm. On the edges, I think they match up really fine on defense. In fact, you know, I mean, it would be a flip of a coin of who's better on the edge rushers or on edge defense, whether it's Notre Dame or Georgia. And, you know, if you had to put me against the wall, I'd even say Notre Dame might have a slight advantage there because they're a little bit more mature. I think the real difference here right now is the speed in the backfield for Georgia in this game. If Notre Dame, or perhaps they do get a performance that is a little bit higher than appears, you know, you watch them and go, boy, that's a big edge to Georgia. I think the tilt of the game goes to Georgia because of the home run potential of their running backs, to tell you the truth. I think that's where the game tilts, and it gives Jake Fromm more leeway than it does Ian Book. So if you're asking where the script is Ian Book has to play a perfect game. Jake Fromm has to play a B game, and he can probably win the game. But the formula is the same. When you're a slight underdog on the road, the formula is stay in the game. Just don't let them run away from you. Stay in the game. And there's no doubt in my mind that Notre Dame can do this. You know, I watched very carefully Notre Dame play against Clemson. Everybody said it was a goat rodeo. That is not what I saw. You know, I saw a team toe-to-toe playing with them. What was it, a minute 50 to go in the half? I mean, it's still a ball game. And if they don't score two touchdowns at the end of the half, one was a, I don't know, I watched it carefully. One was a, I don't know if it was a mix-up in coverage. I can't believe the matchup was the way Coach Leah wanted on that one. So I don't know if it was a busted coverage or not. Another one was just a ridiculous catch at the end of the half. So and then it gets away from you in the second half. There's no, that can happen to anybody. Mm-hmm. But it's not like watching, you know, that we're watching an inferior talented team go against Georgia. There's no reason why Notre Dame can't make this a good football game and press Georgia into playing their best if they want to win the game. One more thing to add. I've watched Georgia play now for 3 years, and I've watched all three of their first three games. They have never played better. Their line is hitting on all cylinders right now. Their running backs, they're almost now. They haven't played elite competition. We all know that. But, I mean, they're just not making mistakes. Their angles of their offensive linemen are perfect. Their strength at the attack point is great. Their receivers are running sharp routes. I'm going to say that Jake Fromm is as good of before the snap as anybody I've seen, maybe all the way back till Drew Brees. I used to think Drew was better before the snap than anybody ever saw, and I think Jake's right there right now. So you're going to get a measurement, and it's nothing to be afraid of, but it's going to be a great measurement for Brian Kelly and the Notre Dame fans, because I think you're going to be playing Georgia at their best. I think they're playing better than anyone in the country.
Gary, aside from just the matchup on the field, I think there's a little concern about how Notre Dame's going to react to going into Sanford Stadium and the atmosphere that will present itself. Notre Dame has had some ups and downs in terms of handling road atmospheres like that. What makes that atmosphere so special down there at Georgia, and how does it compare to other places in the SEC?
Well, we don't do night games. We have our games always at 3:30. Mm-hmm. So we don't do primetime games, and if we do, they've always been involved with Alabama or LSU. We've done a Georgia game every once in a while. Our big Georgia game is always a Jacksonville, a neutral site game.
Right.
I have to say that you are not going to find any prettier setting than Sanford Stadium, and typical of what, you know, Southeastern Conference football is like. The campus stadium is right there. It's nestled beautifully. The colors and the charm will be fantastic for all the visitors from Notre Dame to experience what the Southeastern Conference football is like every weekend. But I've done a few other interviews about this, and I'm saying, you know, if this was Michigan going in there, or Penn State going in there, or maybe even Oklahoma, I would say that the stage and the bright lights might set their team back for a quarter. I can't imagine that the Notre Dame players will be intimidated by this at all. I mean, if anybody is used to playing in big games, big atmosphere, big, pregame, it has to be the Notre Dame football players. So, if I was Brian Kelly, I would look at our team and go, come on, there's one thing we're not going to do is have stage fright. You know, if they beat us, they beat us. I'd be shocked if the Notre Dame players walk in there in awe because the colors are brighter and the lights are big and CBS is doing the game. I think they yawn through that. I think they should worry about those five running backs they may see behind that 320-pound running. That to me is the football game. If Notre Dame can at all keep Jake Fromm from having a right and left punch, then they've got a chance. If they're able to dial anything they want and give Jake mental rest off. I talk about this a lot in college football now. The quarterback is asked to do so much because of the RPOs, the zone reads, the keeps. Ian Book is asked to do way more, produce way more, not only physically but mentally throughout a game than Jake Fromm will be. Jake Fromm 20 times is going to turn around, hand it off, and take a rest. And don't underestimate a mental rest for a quarterback. Ian Book is not going to get five mental rest plays. For that Notre Dame offense to work, they're going to have to tie almost every play into an RPO, a quick screen, a high-low play, meaning that they have two plays on in the huddle and he's going to have to check at the line of scrimmage. And after 70 of those plays, your concentration starts to fade and you make a mistake. I think it's one of the underestimated things we have with these young players, especially the quarterbacks, is in the modern college game, they get no mental rest.
Gary, I thought it was interesting in 2017 when the two teams played. They were further down in the rankings. They were 15 and 24. Right. But I felt like that year, the loser of that game had a chance to get back into the playoff race, and had Notre Dame had a strong November, they would have at least been in the conversation. in this game, it doesn't seem to set up well for at least Notre Dame to get back into the conversation if they lose. I'm curious your thoughts on the loser of this game and if they could be back in that conversation in November.
Well, I think it's an earned advantage that the Southeastern Conference has right now. I mean, they've earned it. I mean, people can be jealous all they want, but they've produced on the field, in the championship games, in the playoffs. And, by the way, the committee, whether they like it or not, notices the NFL draft when, you know, out of the 32 players, 12, 13, 14, and 15 of them are SEC players. So that's their credibility is at the peak right now. So I think, you know, that it would be, for Georgia, embarrassing to lose this game. And I'm not slighting Notre Dame at all, but this is a game they feel, you know, they're going to win. But they could climb back into it by being one-loss SEC champs. I think you may have a point about, you know, usually all tiebreakers go to Notre Dame, but this year their schedule has crumbled a bit. The Stanford losing to UCF, Southern California is down. You know, Michigan, I mean, Notre Dame fans should be pulling for Michigan to win this game this week against Wisconsin. So they need, it's just the way it goes, you know. I mean, who would ever think that, you know, going to Michigan and you might not get the full credit, even though we know what a quality win that is. If Michigan doesn't come and do their part, you know, it might not help them as much. So I see your point. I think it's a tougher climb for Notre Dame should they lose than Georgia, I guess, to keep it simple.
Last one for me, Gary. I'm curious, what would you say is the difference, if there is a difference, between what Kirby Smart is doing with this Georgia program compared to Mark Richt?
Well, I just think he's so much more aggressive than Mark was. Now, you know, Mark built a great program and, you know, had his team really close a few times to getting all the way there. And there were a lot of great players that played, but the depth of talent now, that, you know, this, when I go watch practice now, I wish you all could experience what I get to experience when I get to go watch, you know, Ohio State or Notre Dame or Alabama or Georgia practice. Now it's Clemson. Just when you stand around and look at all the guys and just go, wow, I mean, just the talent being put together is amazing. Currently, only Alabama now, since I've been watching so much, grabs me and go, wow, there's nobody with this kind of talent. Well, now the other monsters are, there's two more monsters, and Clemson and Georgia, and maybe an eyelash behind right now is Ohio State. That's the top of the talent. That doesn't mean you always win. You know, Iowa beats Ohio State. I mean, you lose football games even though you're the more talented team. But right now, when you stand there, and then the accountability playing for those coaches like Nick Saban and Kirby's learned it from them, boy, if you're sensitive, you don't want to play football for these guys because they are on you. I mean, if you're sensitive, you don't even want to coach for Nick or Kirby. It's not a safe place there. They are calling out people in practice, and it's you know, I know – I've known Brian forever. You know, I'm from Michigan. I watched him grow as a coach from Grand Valley all the way from Central and everything, and I've always respected him. In fact, it was about a few years ago, I was pushing people I knew that the Detroit Lions should take a shot at Brian Kelly. And because that's what I think of him. I think he's great at building a program. I don't know if there's many people as good as what he's done through his career. But, you know, Brian sometimes gets chided for his intensity. That's normal fare at Alabama and Alabama now at Georgia. It's you have to be a tough guy to play there, and that comes out on the football field.
Gary, last one from me. You played in an era where Notre Dame winning a national championship was an unquestioned reality. From your standpoint, could you see Notre Dame possibly winning a national championship, let's say, in the next 5 years?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm watching that. There's no doubt in my mind. Listen, one more speed receiver and one more, you know, elite running back on this team right here. And I'm not, you know, maybe somebody will emerge here. I don't know who it may be. You know, I mean, who knows? But there's no reason that this team cannot compete with the top. I mean, they're right on the edge. I mean, it's tough for right now, those teams that I mentioned, it's tough for anybody, but I mean, one more good recruiting class, one special player, I think they're away. And they're always going to have the offensive linemen. It looks like they're always going to have, you know, those front guys. We've been watching, you know, Notre Dame play forever. They're always going to have two or three safeties, one corner. It's that elite running back and elite receiver that's teamed up with the right quarterback, like an Ian Book, that can really change. I'll tell you what's really changed in college football. I think the days of the mobile quarterback is nice. That's great. But because of the new rules with the RPOs and the receivers, you got to be able to throw. There's yards out there. There's 300 to 350 yards out there if you know how to throw the football. And I think that's going to be the future. More and more teams are going to look like the Kansas City Chiefs and the New Orleans Saints, because there's receivers out there and there are yards available. And in the new types of offenses where, and you know what? Alabama just faced this year against South Carolina. Alabama's got two corners in Diggs and Surtain. They're going to be drafted in the top two or three rounds, first, second, or third. They're both NFL players. South Carolina put four receivers out there. So now you got your third and fourth corner covering. There's no doubt in my mind that Notre Dame can put that type of team out there with the right quarterback and have the offense and get that special team together.
All right, Gary. Well, we appreciate you taking time to join us, and we look forward to watching your call on the SEC on CBS Saturday night. You're listening to the Pot of Gold podcast presented by Zaxby's. Now it's time for Place Your Bets.
How much you want to make a bet I can throw a football over the mountains?
This is our segment dedicated to the degenerates. Let's take our shot at some prop bets for the Georgia game. Eric, first one I have for us is over under 3.5 catches for Javon McKinley.
Well, that would be over his career total.
Yes.
So I'm going to say under. I think he's going to get involved in this game, and I think he'll have a couple of catches. I think he's going to be active in the running game, and I think that's a big deal, but I'm going to go under the 3.5.
Yeah, I'm going to go under as well. Javon is probably the guy I'm most interested in terms of the new faces we saw this past week of what he did against New Mexico. How does that translate into him getting some actual real tested reps against top competition? I'm curious about his ability to create separation as a receiver, but obviously we saw that once he gets the ball in his hands, he can be a threat. So I will go under there, but I'm really fascinated to see how things play out for him, and we think he could potentially even start this game for Notre Dame. Next one I have for us is over under 4.5 touches for Avery Davis.
I'm going to go over. I think, you know, he's got that elite speed. He, you know, Brian Kelly mentioned in his press conference earlier this week that he ran almost 23 miles an hour on the 59-yard little shovel pass, and the last guy to do that with a ball in his hands, according to Kelly, is Will Fuller. So I think you've got to give elite speed and an elite athlete a chance to help you win this game. We learned a lot from the 2017 game. Brian Kelly didn't use Dexter Williams in that game, mm-hmm. and I think that was a game that Dexter could have helped him, just because he hits the hole a lot faster than Josh Adams did.
I'm going to go under. I think it's going to get very close to that number, but I'm just not quite sure how many ways they can get him the ball besides on a jet sweep or a quick screen. And certainly they could do those a bunch of times, and hopefully it pans out for them. But I'm just not quite sure if they're going to put him in the backfield as a traditional running back quite yet. But I think you're right. If he can do it, if he's capable of doing it, I think they need to try that, because he does have the speed that no other running back has on this roster.
I wouldn't rule out a direct snap to him either.
Sure, yeah. I mean, you can't rule out the fact that he could throw the ball even.
Right.
If you snap it to him, and he could throw the ball downfield as being a former quarterback. Next one is over under 150 rushing yards for Notre Dame.
Under. If they only got 55... with Josh Adams, 33 trucking, and with Quentin Nelson and Mike Buglinski in that group, I just don't see how they can get to 150. I think it's just very difficult.
Yeah, and Georgia is only allowing 60 yards per game on the ground against obviously lesser opponents. But
the stat I found stunning was Kirby's coached 45 games. Georgia has allowed a 100-yard rusher 5 times.
Well, I don't think Notre Dame has good chances of having a 100-yard rusher unless Avery Davis has 250-yard rushes. So I'm going to go under as well for under 150 rushing yards for Notre Dame. Next one is over under 230 rushing yards for Georgia.
I think Notre Dame is going to stack their defense to cheat against the run. I think they're going to take their chances with the second most accurate quarterback that's playing college football right now, the guy with the second highest passing efficiency career in Jake Fromm, just because of the inexperienced wide receivers. I'm actually going to think they're going to be around that number, and I'll actually go under, although if Georgia throws a couple haymakers earlier, that number is going to get ugly.
Right. I'm going to go with over. I think the thing that will make the difference here is Notre Dame's, I think, safeties and cornerback play. Honestly, they're going to have to make tackles in the open field against these running backs at times. I know their concern is about Notre Dame's front seven and how they will handle them running the ball on the inside, but a lot of times the difference between an 8-yard gain and a touchdown is whether or not that safety comes up and makes the play. We've seen Notre Dame have some troubles with that. Jalen Elliott was in a bad position on New Mexico's first rushing touchdown at the end of the first half this past week, and so I think that is going to play a big role whether or not Notre Dame or Georgia can go over or under that 230-yard mark, and I'm just going to go over. 230 is unfortunately what Notre Dame is averaging giving up against Louisville and New Mexico, so I think Georgia will be able to do the same.
And you know what? Over and under, I think I'm going to be wrong on my prediction.
The last one I have for us is, will Julian Aquara record a sack?
I'm going to say yes, because I think Georgia's offensive line is awfully good, and they're not going to feel the need to try to throw the ball out quick, you know, which is what Louisville and New Mexico have
sure.
done. There's going to be one where he's going to be able to get there, and so I do think he'll get a sack.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think Jake Fromm also, he's not going to be a guy that panics either, so I think that could go against him in a situation here or there, because he's going to hang in there as long as he can, and maybe Julian Aquara is going to get there faster than he would expect. So he's going to have a tough matchup whenever he goes up against Andrew Thomas, who's likely a NFL first-round draft pick. But Julian Aquara is a guy that could be as well, so I think there's a chance that he could win some of those matchups. All right, now it's time for punctuation mark of the week.
Oh, is that an apostrophe?
I think you mean an epiphany.
This is our weekly segment to recognize the apostrophes, periods, and hyphens on Notre Dame's roster. Let's make the hyphen our pick this week with Myron Tagovailoa-Amosa. Myron recorded 2 tackles, including an impressive tackle for a loss against New Mexico. Eric, what do you think of the way Myron has started this season so far?
I like it. I think it's a really difficult thing for you to put him next to what Jerry Tillery did last
right.
year. Tillery is such a special, weird player, you know, 6'7", who can bend the way he does.
Right.
And Myron's just built differently. I think Notre Dame's, you know, I mentioned this earlier this week to someone that I almost feel like Jason Adamolola has a higher ceiling mm-hmm. playing behind him. But I do like what Myron brings to the table. You get a lot of consistency from him. I think he's very smart. I think he's very strong. And I think in tandem with Jason, that's going to be a combination late in the season we're going to be probably talking a lot about.
Yeah, it's tough because I like Jason a lot as well, and I think Myron is a good player at the 3 technique. You almost wish one of them was a nose guard, and
yeah.
so they could both play at the same time. But it's just hard for Notre Dame to get both those guys on the field at the same time. Notre Dame has slid Myron down into essentially a nose guard position when the dime defense comes on the field because he's a good pass rusher from the interior. But I really have liked what he's done. I think he's shown some flashes this season. I think both him and Jason have done that. But if they can continue to get that out of him, that helps. But kind of like what I was mentioning with the safeties earlier, he needs to make sure he stays a gap assignment sound, because if he tries to make a play by going over one gap, he could put the defense in trouble and it could be costly. So good effort so far, 5 tackles this season and 1.5 tackles for a loss, and he's going to need to play very, very well against Georgia this weekend. All right, now it's time for Junior or Junior.
It's Junior.
My Junior.
Our Junior now.
Our Junior. Our Junior.
This is our new weekly segment to highlight one junior by name or one junior by grade. Our inaugural pick this week is going to running back Avery Davis, who's in the junior class. Davis made a splash in his first game back at running back by taking a forward toss in the backfield for a 59-yard touchdown. Eric, I know you certainly have been compelled with Avery Davis returning to the offense. What do you think of how Notre Dame used him against New Mexico and what his role will be moving forward?
I loved it. You know, it was a misdirection play, and then he just kind of ran away from people.
Right.
And I think that's what they want to see from Avery Davis. You know, I had a chance to talk to his quarterback's coach earlier in the week for a story I'm doing this week. From high school, yes. And he said he's had an incredibly great attitude about all these position switches. He just wants to get on the field and play. So you've got a great attitude. You've got an elite athlete. And now it has to kind of cook into something. You know, it doesn't always happen for really good athletes to turn into really good contributing football players. I think Avery Davis's window is now, and that's why I find him so intriguing.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty cool to see how Notre Dame's team reacted when he was able to make that play. And they seem pretty pumped up the fact that he's gone back and forth. They know he's struggled through all those position switches trying to find a role here. And he gets a shot at it, and he does well. That play design was really neat because it happened so quickly. The sweep was – he was already gone, and Ian was still doing a fake handoff to the running back. And so it looked like New Mexico had no idea where the football was at. Obviously, I think Georgia's probably going to be a little bit more prepared for that after seeing it on tape. But even if they're not giving him the ball, that could free some of those Georgia defenders to make sure that they're making sure he doesn't have the ball and making sure they don't allow a big gain like that. And if he gets space like that, we know he has the speed to take advantage of it. All right, now it's time for questions.
Just tell me when you guys are we done with USC? Everybody's done. You guys are kidding me. That's all you want to talk about. All right, let's go.
You can submit questions to us on Twitter each week. I'm at TJamesNDI, and Eric is at EHansonNDI. We got a lot of similar questions this week, Eric, so we'll try to tackle them all.
They've been in my chat for weeks, these questions.
The first one is from Josh Melton at Joshua Melton. I hate to be so pessimistic, but I don't see how the Irish can even beat the spread this weekend, particularly since Georgia's strengths, running the ball, match up so perfectly for them against Indy's biggest defensive weakness. Any shot at an upset on Saturday?
Well, there's always a shot,
That's why they play the game.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I asked Gary Danielson earlier in the podcast what the script was. Now I can use that. And I also got some – here's the thing. Notre Dame is number one in the country in turnover margin. They have to leave Athens as the number one team in turnover margin.
Yep.
They have to win that turnover battle. That helps them. If they've got extra possessions, that's going to – keep them in the game. I kind of think that's where it starts. They have to kind of mitigate the whole rushing offense and rushing defense thing. You know, you can only rely on, you know, playing left-handed so many plays in this game. You've got to be able to have something that's your bread and butter. So, yeah, I think there's a scenario. It's just I don't know that I have a better answer than Gary Danielson did about how it can happen.
And it's not the most likely one. I think even the most optimistic Notre Dame fans have to realize that it's Notre Dame can do this, but it's not like that it's an easy way to do it. And there's going to be, even if Notre Dame plays one of its better games in the last few years, they could still end up losing this game. I think that's how good this Georgia team is.
And when Gary was talking about Alabama and Clemson, they've kind of become the monsters with Ohio State in there. I think from a recruiting and talent standpoint, Georgia is in there. They just haven't won the big games
right
yet.
That's the only holdup there, and certainly Notre Dame wants to prevent them from being able to get another chance at it this year. I think Notre Dame would have to play pretty close to a perfect game. Like you said, win the turnover margin, get a couple big plays on special teams. I think those are always the ingredients for an upset, and Notre Dame's going to need some of that to be able to beat Georgia. Next question is from Stanley in Tampa, at Stanley Tampa. Indy fans are expecting a loss to Georgia, seem nervous, and hoping to avoid a blowout. I think the only chance for an ND win is for the team to get angry, feel disrespected by being a double-digit underdog, and play like they have nothing to lose. Any chance of this happening?
I don't know that they're going to play angry. I don't know that they're going to feel disrespected. But I think they can go in there with nothing to lose because, you know, the pressure is going to be on Georgia. They're going to be expected to win. But Notre Dame holds themselves to a standard, and that's what they're going to try to live up to. And, you know,
they're motivated by trying to get back to the college football playoff.
Yeah, that's what they're in, you know, this is their chance. Right. You know, the schedule is crumbling in front of our eyes. You look at November right now, unless there's a huge turnaround with some of those teams in November, who's going to give you the oomph to get back into this?
Right.
When everybody else is playing top five, top 20 type teams in November. So there's a lot at stake. I mean, you win this game and you are on an arc toward the college football playoff.
Yeah, because you come to Notre Dame to play in games like this. I know it's a cliche to say that, but I think that's why it doesn't really matter to them if they're underdogs or not, because they expect to be in a situation like this and they want to be able to prove that they can win in these situations. And whether or not we think they're going to win or Georgia disrespects them or Vegas bettors disrespect them, I don't think that's going to play too much a role in their motivation going into this game. Next question is an email from Ken in Pensacola. Since Indy is nearly a two-touchdown underdog for this week's game, do you think we'll see some trick plays, and can Georgia be overlooking our team and think they can beat us without much of an effort?
I think we'll see some creativity. I don't know if they'll turn into trick plays, but I think we'll see some wrinkles we haven't seen the first couple of games.
Sure.
And I think Notre Dame can get creative. I think you're far enough along without Jafar Armstrong that you know what the personnel left can do for you. What was the other part of that?
The other part was, is Georgia overlooking our team and because they can think maybe they can win with much?
Well, I'll tell you what. When Gary Danielson said they're playing their best football right now, they had plenty of opportunity to overlook those first three teams. So right. I don't think they're going to overlook Notre Dame.
Yeah, and Georgia also has the added thing where they thought, well, maybe they should have got a chance in the college football playoff last year instead of Notre Dame, and we're bagging on Notre Dame when Clemson was beating up on the Irish, and then Georgia went out and lost its bowl game, which was kind of funny.
To Texas.
So I think Georgia has a point to prove in their mind, so I don't know that they're going to be overlooking Notre Dame just because I don't think that players care too much about the betting line. I don't think that many players know much about what the betting line is unless someone's telling them or asking them about it. So I don't think that they're worried about, oh, this Notre Dame team's nothing, we can take them. They want to prove a point, and even if they think that way, they want to show it. They don't want to go in there and cruise and make it look easy. If they probably want to blow out Notre Dame, so I think they're gonna try as hard as they can to win this game. Next question is from the Jackal at Freak of Nature. Will Book and company have success through the air against Smart's defense?
Well, they're going to have some of it. because if not, then the game is really going to get out of hand quickly.
Right.
When you look at the 2017 game with Brandon Wimbush throwing, that's kind of what kept Notre Dame in the game again.
Right.
I mean, 8 yards was the longest run in that game, which is stunning.
Yeah.
With 37 rushes, 8 yards was the longest run, and I think it was a Wimbush run. So, yeah, I think they can and will have some success in the passing game. The thing about it is then you've got to be balanced, though. If you're not, Georgia eventually is going to be able to counteract that. So there's got to be balance with it. But I do think Ian Book will be able to have some success.
Yeah, I think that Notre Dame's best chance is to have big plays in the passing game. I think certainly they want to try to run the ball, but I don't know that they're going to have a ton of success with that. So they're going to need to rely on Ian Book making the right decisions, not being careless with the ball, not panicking in the pocket, and they have to certainly protect him well too. So it's not an easy task, but I think there is a chance for Notre Dame to be able to do that. But like you said, they can't be just going out and throwing every down because Georgia's going to be pretty aggressive against that to try and stop it. So it'll be interesting. I think for all the flaws that Brandon Wimbush had, he wasn't afraid to throw the ball down the field and let his receivers make plays. And so I think that is one of the opportunities that Notre Dame has. If Chase Claypool can make a play downfield, if Chris Fink can make a play downfield, those are guys that Cole Kmet even. I think Notre Dame's going to have to rely on those guys, and Cole Kmet will certainly be a welcomed face for Ian Book to have another target to throw to. All right, next question is from Tom Schuster at TJS Domer 2. Where did ND win battles in 2017? Where can they in 2019?
They got a big game from Jay Hayes. Notre Dame's defensive line played well. Their defense played well. And again, they were going against a freshman quarterback making his first start who's blossomed into this monster of a quarterback. Offensively, Wimbush made some plays in the passing game. So I think that's...
Despite the receivers that started that
game? Despite the fact that Freddie Canteen and Cam Smith were two of the receivers that started that game. So, you know, again, I think the turnover battle is going to be huge in this game for Notre Dame to have a chance.
Yeah, I think the safety play is a big part of them being able to create turnovers. And certainly it's curious because Notre Dame really likes this dime defense, but how are they going to get Georgia in position to be on the field where Notre Dame can play its dime defense? You want a third and long situation for that. And because Georgia runs the ball so well, I don't know how many opportunities Notre Dame's going to have for that. So I'm curious to see if Notre Dame has some sort of wrinkles, if maybe there's a nickel package that we haven't really seen much of where they can bring in maybe Kyle Hamilton as a nickel back or something like that. Or obviously they could move one of the other safeties to nickel and him play deep safety. And maybe that's a wrinkle of the defense that they could use and take advantage of. But I think defensively and then creating turnovers is a place where they could have a way to keep this a game and potentially win this game. And I think, like we mentioned, throwing the ball, making big plays offensively, and some trick plays too. I think you're going to have to do some of that stuff and try to catch Georgia off guard and keep them on their toes, because I don't think you're going to be able to beat Georgia just running straight at them. Next one is from DOC at DO Carroll 1. Bigger concern for the Georgia game: run defense any down or run offense on third down? And then more likely, Okwara Kareem finally make their presence felt, or Book shows poise in pocket and finds the open receiver? So let's go with the first one. What's the bigger concern, the run defense on any down or the run offense on third down?
Run defense on any down. I think that the run offense is eventually going to find its way on third down. They're going to figure out that short yardage thing. I don't know that they're going to figure it out Saturday, right. But the run defense is a concern when Louisville and New Mexico both get over 200 yards without a elite national back being responsible for those yards. DeAndre Swift is an elite national back, and those other four guys would start at Louisville and New Mexico in a heartbeat.
Yeah, and if you can't run the ball on third down, just throw the ball. So you have another option. Your run defense has to be good, or else you're in trouble. And then the other one, more likely, Okwara Kareem finally make their presence felt, or Book shows poise in the pocket and finds the open receiver.
I think Kareem and Okwara have an easier assignment, even though they're going against what I think probably is the best offensive line in the country.
Yeah.
I think they're that talented. I think there's just so much that Ian Book can't control in that equation.
Mm-hmm.
Kareem and Okwara can. Book is so dependent on other things and other players that I give them the edge in that question.
Yeah, and I would also argue that I think Okwara and Kareem have already made their presence felt this season, even though that may not show up statistically. I think offenses are certainly aware of where they are and have felt their presence. The next question is from Adam Hug at Hug_AJ. Will ND be able to do enough this week to prepare/upgrade our run defense to at least slow down Georgia's running game? Is there anything schematically, defensively, or personnel-wise, you think they can do differently?
Well, I think it's interesting because I was talking to Aaron Taylor this week, the former Notre Dame All-America or guard and tackle, and he also is an analyst for CBS Sports. He's not doing this game. He's doing the San Diego State game. But he said what he thought Notre Dame could do tactically to help against Georgia would be a lot of movement with their defensive line and their linebackers, mm-hmm. a lot of pre-snap movement. He said if Georgia gets their hands on you, it's over.
Yeah.
So he felt like Notre Dame's front seven, if nothing else, is athletic.
Mm-hmm.
So use that to their advantage tactically. So that would be – I think Aaron's a lot smarter than me, so I'm going with that.
Yeah, and I think – repeating what I said earlier, I think the safeties have to play flawless to make that a part of the Notre Dame's run defense. And I think Asmar Bilal really showed something against New Mexico. And if he can continue to do some of what he did, play with the, I guess, conviction seems like I'm downgrading the way he's played in the past, that he didn't play with conviction, but he was committing to what he was doing and making plays, even if he was getting blocked or not blocked. And I think that they need him to play consistently and at that kind of level for this run defense to improve. Next question from Thomas Gardner at Gardner TJ. Similar, can Endy stop runs up the middle? But he also asked, can Endy get a yard or two with smash mouth football? He says, I say no, and all the turnovers, big plays, and poor tackling by New Mexico hit a lot of problems. So let's just tackle the – we've already talked about stopping the run up the middle. Do you think Notre Dame can run up the middle for a yard or two and play smash mouth football?
I was going to say, boy, I'm running out of ways to answer that question. That's why I'm kind of stumbling through my answers here today, because I'm trying to be creative. I think that they can get those third and short and fourth and short. They haven't shown it yet. I think eventually they will. Now, is it going to show up Saturday? You know, the interior of Georgia's line is very, very good. And I think it depends on who the running back is. I feel a lot better if it was Jafar Armstrong
right.
doing those plays, or even Jameer Smith.
Don't know for sure if he's going to play yet.
I think Notre Dame can. I don't think they're going to do it consistently. I think they're going to have to be creative on third and short until all those pieces kind of come together.
Yeah, and I think I touched on it last week, and it was the case again this week against New Mexico, that – their third and short and even fourth and short situations weren't necessarily always on the interior offensive line. When it was third and goal from the one, or first and goal from the three, Sebo Flemister had a one-yard gain. Brock Wright whiffed on his block, and it looked like Tommy Tremble didn't block the right guy, and those guys just slid down and came down and crashed down on Sebo Flemister. And both those tight ends had trouble on the next play, and Notre Dame only got one run, and they eventually snuck it in. And even on that steep, Jarrett Patterson got pushed back into Ian Book, but Ian was able to work his way around him. So I think those are the guys. I still think there's room for improvement for Aaron Banks and Tommy Kramer. I don't know that they played their best games against New Mexico. But the interior running game is about much more than just the center and the two guards and the running back. It's everyone needs to be on their game to make sure that works, because the defense knows you're running it inside in those situations. They're going to be crashing down hard, and I think that's part of the reason why Notre Dame went to some of those outside runs, which were technically passes against New Mexico. But Notre Dame has to be able to run the ball in some situations where the defense knows what's coming, because Georgia's going to be too good to try to trick them at all times. Next one is from Chris Scheiber at Scheib43. Kind of weird when a linebacker question feels like a rarity on the podcast, but he asked about Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah. He said, what's the deal? It's all seemingly correctable mistakes, but after glowing reports from camp, it sounded as if he was ahead of the curve. Is he playing outside of the system, i.e. playing inside on bubbles, not containing outside runs, and consistently taking bad angles?
I don't think he's consistently doing any of those things. I think that he is growing into the position, and I think he's had some pretty good moments. There are times, again, where the learning curve kind of shows up, and I think he's a good enough athlete and a smart enough athlete to correct those things. And I expect to see a better version of him each week, and I would take him on my team right now.
Yeah, Jeremiah didn't have the best game against New Mexico. There were a couple of times where he was either put in a tough situation against a screen pass on the outside, and Notre Dame asked him to play in a lot of space on the outside with the way New Mexico would spread the ball around, and he would sort of sometimes allow himself to be blocked when he could have worked around it. But I think that overall, Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah is a solid linebacker, probably one of the linebackers Notre Dame is most confident in. And I think he won't be tested in the same kind of ways against against Georgia that he was against New Mexico, but Notre Dame is going to need him to be fundamentally sound and technically sound to continue to produce.
And hopefully when he's trying to learn from the game film, it's not taken from the same angle as the NBC cameras.
Oh, yeah, I know we all love that. Did you see my tweet earlier about what I hate more than that?
No.
At the same level? The box scores on Notre Dame's new website.
Yeah.
Their HTML versions. The PDF versions are fine, but the other ones are just brutal, and they're not in any sort of order, and they don't even list what yard the ball was on for the plays by play. But anyways, I give up. Anyways, next question. Dave Simono at DSimono66. We're tired of answering the same questions. We're getting a little loopy. With the emergence of Javon McKinley, would that allow Chris Fink to return to the slot position?
Absolutely. If Javon were to be a staple in the as the boundary receiver, you move Chase Claypool for most of his downs. I mean, I think he's going to play both places. Most of his downs back over to the wide side of the field where he played last year, and then Chris Fink moves back into the slot. The thing is, Chase is so good in the boundary, you don't want to maybe do that full time.
Right.
The other thing is, when Michael Young comes back, then you have even more options.
Yeah.
And Braden Lindsey is coming along at that outside open field receiver. So I think it just gives you a deeper, more versatile core. But I do think Chris is a lot better as a slot receiver than on the outside.
Yeah, and I think I liked some of the possibilities with Keys and Fink on the field at the same time, but I don't know that those two against Georgia are going to be able to create mismatches, because they're fast, but they're not that any faster than the Georgia defensive backs are. So I think that the size that Javon McKinley brings could allow for them to play both Chase Claypool and Javon at the same time, and then put Chris Fink into the slot, which is his best position. Last question we have is from Derek Gerber at Gerbs Irish 02. Is there any known reason ND hasn't worn the 150th anniversary patch on their jerseys so far? I know you love jersey questions, Eric. I haven't seen many, if any, school not have them on this year. I know it's optional, but with as historic this program is, why wouldn't they wear it?
I have no idea. I'm sure you've researched it, so I'll let you go.
Yeah, I don't have an answer for why. I don't know that I haven't asked anyone at Notre Dame why they're not. I know that they're not required to. It's not like the NCAA is forcing all these teams to. They were given these patches, and they were given the option to. Notre Dame, according to the versions we've seen of they're not Shamrock Series uniforms this year, the uniforms that they'll use for Senior Day against Boston College in November, the throwbacks to the 1988 team, those will have the patches on them. And I don't know if you noticed, the mannequin that was standing outside of the Goog Auditorium yesterday was actually wearing that uniform, which I'm sure you didn't notice at all.
I didn't notice. It's so far down my list. That and band questions, and I appreciate them, but I'm way out of my lane. If you ask me whether they should grill the salmon or use it, cook it in a different way, I would have an opinion about that, even though I don't like salmon.
All right, that's it for this week's episode of Pot of Gold. If you don't already, you can subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. Leave us a review or rating if you like what you hear. The Pot of Gold podcast is presented each week by Zaxby's, taking chicken to a whole new level of flavor. Stop by your neighborhood Zaxby's today or order at Zaxby's.com. And Tire Rack, the way tire buying should be. Later this week, Tom Noy and Carter Carls will give you another edition of Pot of Gold Extra Point. Stick with ndinsider.com for plenty of Notre Dame Georgia coverage throughout the week.